There's a thousand further women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to the Katz Report on the radio. This is John Katzlamitas. I write the Katz Report in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly, lasvegassun.com, lasvegasweekly.com. I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group, including The Sunday, the news magazine that comes out on the Sunday, except when it comes out on the Saturday, and the occasions when it comes out on the Monday. Joining me this week is the resident headliner at Cabaret Jazz at the Smith Center. He doesn't really live there. He performs there. Let's clarify that right now. And he has just finished recording a CD that is so good, folks. He recorded this at Capitol Records in Los Angeles over the past 2 years. And before that comes out, he is reuniting with his band, Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns, who backed him during his days as a headliner at Harrah's. That show is April 23rd at M Resort and stars this man, the esteemed Clint Holmes. Clint,
wow, that is some introduction.
You're busier than
man.
How do we meet? Are we able to meet in life?
I know. Well, every once in a while, you and I make a phone call and go, how are you? You okay? Is everything all right? You
know, we're never in the same city.
Yeah.
We're in the same hemisphere.
I'm trying to remedy that and be home a bit more.
Yeah, you've been back for a period of time now, right?
I'm home most of this month and most of May.
Yeah.
And then we'll see.
But, okay, let's go inside out with this. There's a lot going on in your life and career, as I indicated there. Let's talk about the April 23rd show with you and Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. As people who know you are well aware, this was your band at Harrah's from 2000 to 2006.
Yep.
10 years on, you're performing with them again.
It's so
How
great.
How did this happen, and why did it happen?
Well, because we remain friends, and, and also I still, and I know you share this with me, I think they're as good as any band out there anywhere.
Yeah.
And so Jerry and Jamie, you know, all of us have remained friends. And when the M called and said, you know, we'd like you to do this date, I went to Myron Martin at Smith Center because obviously I'm committed there, and he said, "Great, go ahead and do it." Then I started to think, "What should I do?" And I thought, "Man, this is a chance to play with the guys again." And so I called Jerry Lopez and the band leader for Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of the guys are in different shows. Some of them are in Celine's show, some of them are in Donnie and Marie. You know, they're in shows.
Exactly, Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Dave Richardson.
And almost all of them said, "We'll take a night off and do it."
That's so, what they had to do.
That's what they had to do.
That's why this can't happen very often,
right? So it's a very exciting thing to me. We're in the midst of putting together the exact show.
This is at the Pavilion
at the M Resort.
Yeah,
which is
a couple thousand,
big old room. Yeah, that's kind of scary. But
it's interesting. Yeah, we'll talk about this. I mean, the acts that have performed down there, everyone from the Shintas to Rick Michael has been down there. The Shintas have done a couple gigs down there. They do well. They've got a kind of a collective audience there, as you know, committed fan base down there for that room. That'll help. But it's going to be a big test for both sides. It's a very busy weekend.
Yeah, it's a busy. Not only is it a busy weekend, but I'm here a lot. You know, I mean, I'm here, and I get very aware of that. That you know, people, they see you, and so it kind of runs into that one, into this one, into that one. And what I'm doing in town right now is almost totally based on locals. It's not a tourist Smith Center.
Both these venues are your
locals. So I'm it's funny because I was driving here today. My manager said, "How are the tickets going?" And I said, "I don't know, and I don't want to know because I'm going to do the show anyway." You know, I've always kind of had that attitude. It's I don't want to get into it's not going well or hype myself. So I just hopefully it'll do well. We're talking about it now, and it's still a couple weeks away. So
what do you guys going to perform? Have you worked out your set list yet?
Yeah, I'm going to do something that I do anyway, and then some things that I did before with Santa Fe, and then some Santa Fe tunes. Like, you know, when we go to see Santa Fe, and they do things like, what's the Stevie tune they do? Living for the City?
Living for the City.
I always sit there and go, man, would I like to jam on that? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that. And I'm probably not going to sing the lead. I think Jamie sings the lead on that, but I'm going to join in. We're going to do Canta Conmigo, and that's a tune that Jerry Lopez sings.
Yes.
But but mm-hmm. I wrote it with him. So I'll sing part of that. Going to do You Don't Know Me, which is intimidating because Tony Davidge sings the living heck out
really
of that thing.
He really throws that down. Yeah, Tony's
something
these
else.
These guys are all top-notch, folks.
They're all
A-plus
top-notch.
Everywhere.
So I'm looking at it. I told Jerry, I'm looking at a lot of it as like us as opposed to my show with a band.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, it is like a big band.
Yeah.
A show band. Yeah, yeah. Even though you're the front of it this time. I guess the advantage is you get to pick what is performed and
right.
instead of being called up by Jerry, how it usually works.
Yeah, right. But it's that kind of a thing. When we were at Harris, I featured those guys because you know this story. Should I tell the story mm-hmm. about
tell a story about how you got together with Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns in the first place. You were at Golden Nugget for a little less than a year.
Right.
You came out.
Exactly.
And this is where people got to know you based on the shower commercial ad campaign, singing in the shower. The first look we had of Clint Holmes in Las Vegas.
Isn't that sad? And I'm still here.
You're still here.
Still here.
Yeah, and you're clean. anyway, so that's on that backdrop. You were leaving your gig at the Golden Nugget.
Right. And I just signed a deal with Harris.
Okay.
And my manager and I went to see the guys. We went to see Santa Fe at, I think it was a Palace Station.
Palace Station had their lounge at the time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there listening to them, just enjoying it. And my manager leans over and says, "That's your band." And I counted 12 people and said, "I can't afford that band." And he said, "You can't afford not to have that band."
Right
and
on.
The idea was, if you're going to make an impact in a town, and where I was not known at that time, mm-hmm. I was just breaking in,
yeah.
then you better have something that people go talk about afterwards. Mm-hmm. You need people to walk out and go, and the perfect thing is, hey, man, that guy's great. That band's great. What an incredible mm-hmm. musical evening. You should go. It turns out to be the smartest thing I ever did.
It helped set the stage for everything you've done in Las Vegas.
It's exactly right, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, Mr. Holmes, and allow Josh Bell to come in and talk about The Jungle Book and Criminal. Those are two different movies, folks, starring Josh Bell, who hates everything, but he might not hate these. We'll find out. And then we'll be back with Clint Holmes, so stick around. I know I won't.
Have you lost your mind?
You said you wouldn't get mad.
Did you listen to anything Akita taught you? There's no place in the jungle for these tricks. You want to do this, you do this in the man village.
But I'm helping Baloo get ready for hibernation.
That's Neil Sethi as Mowgli and Ben Kingsley as the voice of Bagheera in Disney's The Jungle Book. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. The latest in Disney's series of live-action remakes of its animated classics is a fairly faithful retelling of its source material, about a young boy raised by animals in the jungle. The tone is an awkward mix of savage jungle naturalism and cuddly animal antics, and it only confuses things further when the filmmakers throw in a couple of songs from the original movie. There's a sort of prefab blandness to it all that is partly a result of the amazing photorealistic CGI. It's a carefully rendered technical marvel with very little artistry or soul. I give The Jungle Book 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is the sci-fi thriller Criminal, starring Kevin Costner and Gal Gadot.
Did you work with Billy?
I don't think anyone like him ever would have worked with somebody like me. They stuck Billy in my head. I got a scar, see?
Thanks to an experimental and nonsensical procedure, the memories of a dead CIA agent are implanted into the mind of murderous psychopath Jericho Stewart, played by Kevin Costner. After a fairly tense opening, the movie gets bogged down in an incoherent terrorism plot, along with absurdly sappy scenes of Jericho discovering human emotions. Costner has a few strong moments as a gleeful killer, but he can't reconcile that side of the character with the burgeoning hero. I give Criminal 2 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Katz Report on the radio. This is John Katzalamidis of the Katz Report, Las Vegas Sun, Las Vegas Weekly, sitting with Clint Holmes here in the studio, who's got all kinds of stuff going on. We're just talking about how he reunited with the Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns for his show April 23rd at M Resort. We touched on something earlier, Clint, that I wanted to ask you about, and that is how an artist of your merit who can do a lot of work has to be wary of oversaturation or
sure.
overexposure.
Sure.
How do you measure that? You're at Cabaret Jazz Monthly,
right.
three times a month.
Yeah, three shows.
Per month, the first weekend. And that's been going on for 4 years now.
I know. It's amazing.
And you're pretty busy otherwise, and you do a lot of appearances. You do stuff philanthropically. You're around all the time. How do you make sure that people are wanting to see you enough to satisfy the need for your business?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's what happened at Harris. We were there for almost 7 years. And we changed the show every year, and within that year we changed some material to keep it fresh. Because Harris, I don't really know about other hotels, but Harris has a very built-in clientele. There are people who come to Vegas twice a year, three times a year, and they always go to Harris.
Right.
So on one level, it's a good thing, because if they like the show, they're excited to come back see it. On the other level, after maybe 7 years, they go, hey, they're great. Got anything mm-hmm. else? So
right.
I think that, we kind of ran our course at Harris, and it was mutual. I had some things I wanted to do too. So mm-hmm. so the challenge, and it's even harder when it's a local thing, because you're kind of gleaning from the same audience.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to come back. And Frankie did it at Smith Center too, mm-hmm. but he was doing once a week. I'm doing three shows for 4 years. That's a lot of shows.
Yeah.
So we change it. Frankie changed it up. I change mm-hmm. it up.
Talking about Moreno.
Frankie Moreno. I'm sorry. Yeah. You change it up. Mm-hmm. So that people will, and you hit on, I'll say the next show we do next month is going to be James Taylor meets Stevie Wonder. And X amount of people go, oh, great. I love Stevie and I love mm-hmm. James. Let's go. And then other people will go, I'll wait till he does Cole Porter. You know what I mean?
Or Beatles and Bacharach. So the goal has been the whole way is not to repeat the same show over each month.
Right.
And at first it was do a different one every time, right?
Yeah.
You've finally had to kind of lap yourself a little bit.
Well, what I've started to do now is in June, for instance. Billy Stritch? Billy.
Yeah.
Billy's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do Mel Torme meets Nat King Cole.
He plays with Liza?
Yes, he does. He's Liza's musical director. And other people. Mm-hmm. So that's a real change. Billy wanted to come in and do it. So,
yeah.
So it's great. In May, Monty Alexander, the great Jamaican pianist, is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm his quote-unquote special guest. And that's a hang.
Uh-huh.
Capathia's coming in, my girl, in May, and I'm going to hang with her. But my next show is June, and that's with Billy Stritch. So that, again, that's another a real change.
Right. And we should mention the MDs that you've worked with during your run here in Las Vegas. It'd be your good friend Bill Fain.
For years.
At Harris.
Yeah, Billy was all through Harris.
Yeah, and then Jeffrey Nyman through the last 3 years
three plus years
at Cabaret Jazz.
And I'm still working with Jeff on certain projects.
And then Christian Tamberg. Is your guy at Smith Center.
Smith Center.
How do you decide when to change up, that very important role in your show?
When I need inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's that thing. All of the people that we mentioned are brilliantly talented mm-hmm. professionals.
Great arrangers
mm-hmm. and great pianists. Mm-hmm. And for someone like me who is pretty eclectic in my tastes and what I want to do, it's always interesting to have somebody else kind of kicking me in the butt and saying, mm-hmm. let's go here. Have you tried this? And so Christian is a kind of a new musical force in my life, and it works very well. And it kind of fits in with the CD, what the kind of stuff that's on the CD, it fits in very well.
Yeah.
I'm having a great time with him. I had a great time with Jeff. And like I said, I still work with Jeff.
Yeah.
I still work with Bill once in a while.
Yeah. He's still in your life also. Let's talk. You mentioned a CD. We had a chance to listen to this CD. I think, did we listen to all that whole thing at the Studio of the Palms?
I'm not sure. I think we listened to pretty
most
much
of
everything.
It.
Yeah.
Powerful, very rangy CD.
Yeah.
Some jazz. This with Dee Dee Bridgewater singing on it, Jane Monheit, her guests.
And Joey DeFrancesco playing
the B3 or organ, which hasn't been produced since 1973.
Is that true?
That is true. They've simulated the sound, but the actual last one off the line was then. So this is an old talent.
yeah.
A lot of classic and vintage style talent. Tell me about what is on the album, why you decided to go this direction, and when we can hear it exactly.
Well, I think the concept is that the way music is sold in particular and listened to has changed over drastically. In the old days, when you made an album, there was sort of a thread there, a mood maybe even, because people listened to it back to front. Now, some people still do that,
mm-hmm.
but an awful lot of music is sold off. I download that cut, I really like that cut. Michael Bublé, I think Greg, our producer, talked about that, that Michael Bublé started doing that about 5 or 6 years ago. He would do some kind of vintagey Sinatra stuff, and then right in the middle of it,
right,
he'd put an original pop song, which, you know, probably people went, you can't do that. And his producers or his managers understood that that's the direction things are going. Mm-hmm. So we hope we have stuff on our thing that jazz stations can comfortably play that really fits into their mm-hmm. demographic. We have a couple of with Lettucey, we have a song that could be
right.
played on AC Urban, and we have a couple of straight ahead pop things. So we have, and that's the other thing that, you know, Dave Koss, that mm-hmm. good example. I wrote a song with the smooth jazz saxophonist Dave Koss,
yeah.
and Dave has a show on XM Sirius XM. You know, he's very excited to play that record on that format.
It's a beautiful song.
So for me, the whole idea of a record right now is, you know, I'm not Pollyanna in the least, is to open new doors. I want to do jazz festivals. Mm-hmm. I want to play more with symphonies. I want to expand my audience. So that's what potentially a record can do for me over a period of time.
Right.
Is if it gets played and it's something that a certain genre likes and they play it a lot, and you from that you spring and you get a TV situation, you get on Ellen. It's that, for me. So that's the idea of a record.
I know that this means a lot to you because of the amount of time and work you put into it. I think when this whole thing started, we were expecting to see it in the fall of the year it started.
Some crazy idea like that, yeah.
It was like October, and then it became, okay, stop asking about it.
And stop mentioning it.
I was tired of seeing you wince or pause, hearing you pause. But why there's a great deal of investment artistically and financially mm-hmm. and in terms of time for this album. What do you think, now that you've finished the process, right. it required that much work and effort?
Well, okay, there are a bunch of reasons. The easiest ones to talk about are the fact that I travel and Greg travels, the mm-hmm. producer.
Greg Field.
Greg mm-hmm. Field, sorry, yeah. And has other projects. So there was a lot of time when we would say, okay, when are you available? And I'd look at my calendar and go, boy, I can't, another month. And so May 3rd, I'm in blah, blah, blah. So all of a sudden, 6 weeks right. before we could get together again. So that was a real physical logistic problem. But another thing that I've learned, and I was told this the very first session we did by the guy who arranged the Basie tune, I'll think of his name in a minute, Gordon Goodwin. He said, we all get upset with Greg because he takes forever. He said, and then he hands us the record and we all go, okay. Thanks.
Okay.
And then we get a Grammy Award. I mean, Greg, the last 7 or 8 CDs Greg's produced have had some, if not one Grammy, he's gotten nominated in certain areas. Mm-hmm. He's that level guy. And I've sat with him, John, on so many occasions. Well, I'll drive down to LA on Friday and we'll say, okay, we're Friday and Saturday, we're going to work on such and such. And we get in the studio and we never get past the first thing because it's so meticulous. And he's looking for, and I'll do 27, 30 takes on a song, not because the first 27 sound bad, but because he's looking for a certain magical moment mm-hmm. that we haven't, and then he'll take them all and find those magic things.
What were you saying the other day? It was like, that was great. Let's do it again.
Yes, do it again.
That was perfect.
That's the perfect.
Okay,
that was perfect. Let's do it again. Yeah.
Well, how do you? I can imagine what it must be like.
Well, it's like working with Larry Moss, our friend yeah. who's a director mm-hmm. and acting coach. I tell you, truthfully, there were days where I would think to myself, I suck. I mean, why is anybody investing in a record for me? I suck. And what you find out is that almost every recording artist goes through this process
mm-hmm.
because a live performance, you have so many factors working for you. You have your own persona, you have the band, you have the sound, you have the physicality, you have the interaction with an audience. A record is a very flat mechanism, you know, and if it doesn't affect the listener, if you're not moved by it, then you don't have anything. So it's mm-hmm. a different process.
Right.
I know Michael Jackson did a jillion takes, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And he got magics. So
yeah, it's the repetition that makes it.
So
makes
yeah,
it work.
So I think that those are the main reasons why it's taken so long, you know. And here we are.
I had mentioned Clint in a column that's out in this the current issue of Las Vegas Weekly that if you take all of this activity collectively, it reflects that you want to just be known to be working with the best of the best. Mm. Whether you're talking about Santa Fe, Greg Field in the studio, these are the best people around you that you can really find available to work with you, right?
Yes.
It's amazing to me, and here the point of this is that you turn 70 in May, and I mentioned this in the column too. It's an unbelievable thing for people around you to know that, and you still have this palpable vigor creatively and even physically to do this stuff. How do you explain that? How do you, what do you owe that to?
Well, I mean, I'm healthy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just knocked on wood. Mm-hmm. But there's so many things to do that I want to do. So many songs I want to sing. That's a simple way of putting it, but it's more about growing and learning. And when you're exposed to people like Greg, people like Larry mm-hmm. Moss, people like Dee Dee Bridgewater, you know, mm-hmm. you're constantly challenged to be better, to be the best of yourself. You know, and that's thrilling to me. I've had in the past, let's make it 5 years, I've had so many experiences that have challenged me. Going to Feinstein's in New York and being reviewed by the New York Times and the mm-hmm. Wall Street Journal and all these guys who
which you don't need to do at this point in your career. You don't need to put yourself out there. You can have Cabaret Jazz and fill that place just fine without New York Times.
Yeah, without New York Times. But that was a big challenge to me. You know, it was a big challenge to
me. And they really liked it.
Mm-hmm. And then to run into people that I admire, like Kurt Elling, and have them come mm-hmm. back to see you time and time again, and you go, okay, this guy doesn't need to come back. He's coming back because he digs what I do.
Yeah.
And to stretch myself, and I've been stretching myself every day.
Yeah.
So I think for me, there's still a lot of drive. There's still an awful lot of drive to grow as an artist, to have new experiences, and to increase my audience. Because God willing, I want to sing for another 20 years. I mean, you know, as long as mm-hmm. I can sing and sing well, I want there to be people who want to hear me.
How do you keep up your voice?
I know what I'm doing.
You know what I mean?
I'm trained. Mm-hmm. I was trained. I've had probably 10 teachers in my life. My mother being the first one.
Mm-hmm. Opera singer.
Opera singer. And I went through what every singer does. I had nodules. I had nodes on my voice when I was about 20 or 21 years old. And that's when you have literally a polyp on your vocal cord. So when you go to sing, it comes out like this. And you go, oh my God, mm-hmm. what's that about? Mm-hmm. And that was I was fortunate. I learned it. And I said, okay, never again that. And that's because I was doing 3 shows a night, 5 shows a night, singing Earth, Wind, and Fire, and singing mm-hmm. Blood, Sweat, and Tears, doing all that stuff. And my teacher said, well, if you want to sing for the next 20 or 30 years, you can't do that. You know, you won't have a voice. So I learned, and I know vocal technique. I know when I'm feeling tired, and mm-hmm. when I feel my voice feels tired, I shut up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I love cigars. I stopped smoking cigars. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of those things, because I am going to be 70, and I do feel vocally that I can do everything vocally that I've ever done. So I want to continue to do that.
Right. You were talking earlier about getting back to the point about working with great people. You're a tennis player. You play tennis.
Yeah, I love tennis.
It's like that
yeah.
saying in tennis, if you're a 3.5 player, you want to find the fours.
Yep.
They're in the three, you got to find a 3.5, yeah. which is great unless you're a four, then you're screwed.
Then you're screwed.
But
yeah, right.
That's kind of the attitude you have, right?
I mean, absolutely.
You want to find those guys.
I want to find out how mm-hmm. I stack up against them in my own mind. I tell you a quick story. Years ago, when I first started, I came up with this little theory for myself. I want my show to be a show that anybody can come and watch and enjoy, whether sophisticated, not just parts of it that they mm-hmm. can enjoy. But if Tony Bennett walks in, I want him to get what I'm doing and mm-hmm. like it, okay? So, I was at Harris, so 10 years ago, whenever it was, Tony comes in. Tony comes in to see my show. And it was like a literal fulfillment of dream. And I waited downstairs in the dressing room, and it took forever. And I thought, geez, he's not going to come down. He's not going to even come down and say nice anything. What had happened, of course, was people surrounded him, and he had to sign autographs and get out of there.
Yeah.
But he comes down in my dressing room, and he stands in the door, and he looks at me, and he goes, you know that song, The Impossible Dream? I never liked that song until tonight. You did it for me, man. Well, there it is. For me, that was a moment of like, okay. I had that come true, that I was performing for anyone and everyone who came in, and Tony Bennett got what I did.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about what I do.
How important is it for you in this current seat? That's a great story. I get chills thinking about what that must have meant. How important is it for you to have this CD, which is yet untitled? We don't know what it's going to be called yet. I know that's still circling around.
Swirling. So. we may cut If Not Now When, if we cut If Not Now When.
Add that song,
that would be
a great title
for it, yeah.
Do you have to cut the song to have it be the title?
Probably not.
I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking out loud. I mean,
there's
another
couple
months.
I could call it Michael Bublé 4. You know? Sell a few copies before they figured me out.
The Whiter album.
Yeah.
How important is it for you to, I mentioned this in the column too, that you're going big fly on this thing. And I mean, you really want to have this be received well.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. And Greg's a Grammy guy. Everybody on this
right.
involved in it is Grammy next to their name. It's in the Capitol Records studio, which breeds Grammy Award and classic songs all over the place. Sinatra, Dean Martin, Beach Boys, everybody recorded there. Is it really important to you consciously to receive even a nomination at that level?
That would be a thrill, but no. I'm not
really
thinking about that. You think about it from the point of view of the album being successful,
right?
You know, because obviously you get a lot of attention. But I also know there's a lot of other things. Like Greg said to me, you hope that Tony Bennett doesn't come out with one. You hope that the five big huge artists in the same kind of adult contemporary world don't come out, because he said some of the greatest albums that I've been associated with had to go up against Tony Bennett's next CD
right.
or Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett, and you go, well, the album's not successful if it doesn't get a Grammy nomination. I don't feel that at all. I know that creatively it's successful. It's a beautiful CD. It's well done. It's well crafted.
After its release, what is a measure of success then for you?
To get respected and to open doors for me.
Right.
So that next year or something, I can be doing the Monterey Jazz Festival,
right.
By any other name. That's the measure of success for and grow my audience wherever I'm performing.
Love it. Just keep trying to advance the cause, right?
Yeah,
that's it. All right, folks. Well, we're going to have to close.
I don't want to stop. Do we have to stop?
We got to stop. There's other shows that happen in this studio, apparently.
And there's other shows.
I've learned this just like recently. There's a whole radio station, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah, KUNV has more programming than just me, so I'm insulted. Anyway, the show to see, folks, is April 23rd, M Resort. Clint Holmes reunited with Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. What's that, 7 p.m.? Start?
7 p.m., I believe, yeah.
It doesn't happen often, folks, so get there. This is the best of the best in our city. And the CD, Yet Untitled, is going to be out in May?
May, June.
Unless you have to record again.
Exactly. Jerry Metellus has taken the photographs in 2 weeks. So after that, it's a matter of let's go.
You can't change your appearance whatsoever from that point until when it's released.
To beard or not to beard.
That's it. You got to live with this look for a while.
Right.
I'm going for beard.
Okay, yeah, me too.
I think beard.
Me too.
And we'll do it again, Clint. Well, I guess I'll see you later on.
Yeah, see you tonight.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.